All right, I am Dina, and I am an adult child of chaos and dysfunction. I think just a note, that's probably the most important thing I'm going to say. And I do say that at every meeting I go to, and I go to a lot of meetings, and there's a reason I do that. And the reason I do that is because I could forget. I could easily forget that I am an adult child that was raised in chaos and dysfunction. And I could forget where I come from. And I know what that will lead me to. That will lead me to relapse. And one of the things I love about our literature is we talk about relapse in our literature. Because this is a a condition that we have. That started out, I mean, that was the survival, right? We survived our childhood with these brains helping us out by forgetting half of it. So I'm gonna try to be a little concise. So my life today is far from what it was when I got here. It's a miracle. I did flounder for quite a while. And then I'm going to just say that Loving Parent Guidebook was a game changer for me. I have been in a Loving Parent Guidebook meeting that meets every Thursday, where just started the book for the third time. Each time we read the book, it took a little over 2 years. So that's how long I've been working in that book. And I knew the first time I read it. I did read it through once on my own. And I knew that that was what I needed. I knew the answers were in that book. But of course, reading this stuff on your own is like you might as well just like put the book on top of your head and walk around with it, because that's about as good as it did me at first. Because I find this program, the literature is fabulous. We have a lot of amazing literature. And it's all good stuff. But the literature, and it's very easy to read. We don't beat around the bush. You don't have to. I was talking to a fellow traveler earlier this evening about the difference between us and some other 12-step programs. You don't have to read between the lines. We're going to talk about the abuse. We're going to talk about what child neglect looks like, what it feels like, and it's going to be right there. So the literature is easy to read, as far as what grade level. The problem is in the doing. The problem is in applying the literature to our lives. And that's where I didn't get it at first. I came to ACA for a long time before I really understood that I needed to apply the things that I was learning. And this is where I start to tell you where I was when I got here. Now, when I got here, in our literature, in our opening, we say that many of us did not accept that some of our current attitudes came from something that happened in our childhood. And that was me. I didn't get it. I came here because I read, I was in the beverage program, and but I did the steps in that program. They were great, but I did not have the aha spiritual awakening, I'm cured now moment that some people get. And I didn't really understand why. And I know today it's because I did not have a relationship with a spiritual being, entity, a power greater than myself that I could trust. I did not have that relationship, and I didn't know that I didn't have that relationship. I had a God that like kind of lived in my head, but not like an actual energy that I could connect to. I didn't understand why. And I had gone through a series of codependent relationships, and I read Codependent No More and You're Not Crazy, You're Codependent. And both of those books said, if you're having these issues, then you're probably an adult child and you need to go to ACA. And I was like, damn. So off I went to ACA, and in the beginning, I didn't know what I didn't know what was going on. What I knew was people were talking about the truth. They were talking about what happened to them when they were little. And they were telling on their parents and their guardians and their caregivers and teachers and whoever else had kind of done them dirty when they were little. And I was like, oh, there's something about this language. There's something about hearing them tell that kind of moved stuff inside of me. In the beginning, I didn't have a re real relationship with my inners. I remember I hear something, and then I kind of like I'm kind of a visual spiritual person. Like I like see like little me run across the room, and I think I don't know if that was real. And then I'd get these visions, and I'd have to kind of like poke at them and be like, oh, that is real. That really did happen. And a lot of times it was because I recognized the room I was in. So that was the house and that was the room. So it took a little while. It took a little while for me to just have the memories come up. And as they came up, I worked on them. I had done work previous, back in the day. There was a program called Dianetics, and I tried that because I tried editing everything. I knew I was broken, but I wanted to fix me. And Dianetics helped me to see that I had a dysfunctional childhood, which I didn't even know I had a childhood, let alone that it was dysfunctional. The problem with that was it didn't do anything to help me connect with that child myself emotionally. So I ended up doing more damage. Because I was just as dysfunctional as my dysfunctional parents were, as any of my caregivers or people I had known. So, I had all these memories came to the surface of my childhood, and then I was like, suck it up, buttercup, let's move along and get on with our life. And that's how I was trained. I didn't know that. So I re-traumatized myself and I didn't know. Like we just don't know what you don't know. And I lived that way for a long time, thinking, oh, I did this work, I cleared my brain, and my past is no longer controlling me. But I was not in touch with my heart or my emotions. And I didn't know I wasn't in touch with it because you don't know what you don't know. Fast forward, doing this work. So I did end up, I had 13 years of contented sobriety, and then my mother passed away. And then I had 8 years of discontented drunkenness. Well, I should say I had 13 years of discontented sobriety, followed by 8 years of discontented drunkenness. It was the one common denominator. It was all discontented. I wasn't happy in my life, and I didn't know. I didn't know how to put two and two together. And I came to these meetings for a long time, and I did a lot of work, and it was good. It was good work. No regrets. Then in 2021, they put that book out, The Loving Parent Guidebook. And for me, that was the missing piece that I did not have before. Because as many times as I read the solution is to become your own loving parent, I did not know that I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what a loving parent looked like. I didn't know that we were supposed to get some stuff. I didn't know that we were supposed to be learning how to take care of ourselves emotionally, energetically, physically, sure, fine, whatever, they fed me and, put clothes on my ass and sent me out with the world. I'm sure somebody told me to brush my teeth. But that wasn't the stuff that I was missing, and I didn't know it was missing. I remember the first time in the group I read the book with, we read those the part where it says about universal human needs to be seen, to be heard. What? What? Those are you though. So I came here with this universal, this human need. I needed someone to see me and validate me and hear me. Nobody ever asked me when I was little what I thought about anything. Like I think I thought I was a rag doll, a little show, a toy, you know. My mother would drag me around from house to house. All the relatives were fighting because that's how that went. And we couldn't tell anybody that we went from one house to another because we didn't know who wasn't talking to each other. So we would just get dragged from house to house to house. And then, you know, at each house, we'd eat a meal. And you couldn't say no because you couldn't tell them, well, you just ate a meal. To talk about, you know, how to start an eating disorder 101, right? So, in the Loving Parent Guidebook, it really is a guidebook on how to become your own loving parent. So if you haven't cracked it open, and it's a great place to start, because it, you know, so how am I going to be my own loving parent if I don't know what that looks like? If I don't know what this kid, you know, inside of me needs. I don't know how to take care of a. I don't know how to take care of a kid at all, let alone, you know, I just don't know what that looks like. So that book really helped me learn. And then it dawned on me somewhere in doing the work that I didn't just have a inner child that wanted to come out in color, you know, and which is fine. You know, a lot of people talk about coloring and doing all the things that kids like to do. I didn't have a child that wanted to color and do a bunch of stuff. I had a traumatized child who was sullen and sad, and she was hurt, and she didn't want to talk to me because I was her biggest abuser. Because you know, I left that house, and you know, and I went on with my life. And I chose partners who were going to be just as rude as they were, because that's what I was used to. And I was rude to her. You know, I didn't consult. I didn't consult with her, just like I wasn't consulted when I was dragged from house to house. I didn't consult with my inners about what I was going to do or where I was going. And so in our I was doing the check-in one day in that Loving Parent Guidebook. It's on page 233, in case you're curious. You put check-in, and you got to check in with yourself. And the reading on that day was on safety, being safe. And I hear this voice inside of me, and it says, "Who's going to keep me safe from you?" Oh, man, take a stake to my heart, right? Who is going to keep you? And I thought, oh, you're right. You're right. Because I've done nothing but try to con you and push you around and, you know, get you to be what I want you to be our whole life. As long as I've been alive, I've been pushing you around. And who is going to keep you safe from me? And I thought, I got to step up my game. I need to try to, you know, I need to be a better loving parent, you know. And so it began. So it really began, you know, in earnest. And I had some stuff I had to do, you know. We have a in the Big Red Book, there's a great there's a meditation. I'm not going to call it great, but it's a meditation, and it's about when you're walking on the beach with your inner child, and then you see your birth parents, and they're walking on the beach, and you know, this scene plays out, and they wanna talk to your child, and you're like, no, she's with me now, or he's with me now. And that meditation really kind of didn't do anything for me, I have to admit, because my family was never gonna be on the beach. I don't particularly care for the beach, and I was never gonna see them on the beach, and this wasn't gonna happen. So, but there was a thing that, you know, was inside of me that was really needed. It was like an itch that needed to be scratched. I would tell everybody the story I would go around, tell everybody a story about how my grandmother died when I was 5. She was my primary caretaker. And I didn't get to go to the funeral, so I didn't know where she went. It took me years to figure out that she was dead. Years. And if you had told me that she was in Vegas with Elvis, I would have believed you. Because I had no idea. I didn't know what dead meant. 5-year-olds don't know what dead means. But this woman who was my primary caretaker, up until that point, was all of a sudden she was gone. She was missing in action. And I was literally inconsolable. I spent up until what was it? So I'm telling you, the book came out in 2021. It's not that long ago, right? I spent all those years wanting this woman back, to come and treat me like a little baby. But now I'm closer to 60 than 50, so I will tell you something. So that's a long time to be having this craving, like what, this hunger inside of me. And it dawned on me, the meditation I needed was a funeral. I needed to have a funeral for grandma. So I did this thing where I imagined I was taking my inner child to my grandmother's funeral. And she did exactly what she probably would have done in the real world, which is why they didn't take me, was she climbed into the coffin and tried to wake grandma up. And I was a good parent, and I told her, "Grandma's not getting up. Grandma's gone home. She's not in there anymore. We gotta say goodbye to grandma." And we cried. Whoo! Whoo! If you told me she had just died that day, I would have believed you. We cried so hard. And then we laughed about crying. And then 2 days later, I was sitting on the recliner back there where I do most of my writing and a lot of work. And all of a sudden, I felt like I felt her crawl into my lap. And she trusted me. And and she was it was she just became more real, more alive. So I think I just want to suggest, if if the meditation in the book does it bring you to your inner child, you make up your own, find one that will, because this stuff does work. And there's a lot of examples in the book, but they're not perfect. The literature is very dense and it's rich, but it's not, we have to figure out what our needs are. I have this I have something that I call the recovery re equation, okay? And it's the difference, and if you're looking for some of the answers of this, of what we needed, and then the Loving Parent Guidebook does a really good job explaining what we needed emotionally as children. So there's the difference between what we needed and what we got, right? And that hole in the middle is what we learned to backfill. And that's my job. That's nobody else's job. It's my job to figure out, and only I know. I mean, we may all know what we needed, right? Okay, so we have these universal needs that we all have. Great. But only we know what we got. So figuring out what that difference is, and how to fill that gap, is that's our job. And that's what, we learn going to these meetings. And I find that it's interesting. It's interesting literature, and it sparked, you go on a whole, there's so much out there now. When I started back in the 90s, this is not the world we lived in. This stuff wasn't out there. You had to really dig for it. There was maybe one bookstore in the whole state. I remember Walden's Books had a one shelf of self-help books, and now it's just there's so much out there. But this program is not easy. I mean, if there was a quicker, faster solution, I would have found it. I just, it takes time. This stuff takes time and patience. And here's the thing, is that's what we're learning. Who knew? Like, I didn't, like, if you told me before I got into the program, that learning to have compassion and kindness towards my wounded, traumatized inner child was the secret sauce. Like, it just that like just went right over my head. The idea that I did not have the tools, and the tool was love. We talk about it all the time. We love songs. Everybody's love, love, love. I had no, I don't think I had any idea what that really meant. To just sit. There were times where I met parts of myself that they just wanted me to come and sit next to them. I would do that every day until they would want it, until they were ready to talk. I didn't, my, now the everybody's Gabby. Like we, now, life is different because, we have the, I have this relationship with my inners. We could talk about anything, but in the beginning, she didn't want to talk to me. And I had to just go and sit on the bed next to her, in that room that she, she was sitting there, and I just would sit next to her and let her know, well, I'm here. When you're ready to talk to me, I'm here. And eventually she did. She talked to me. And we talked about a lot of stuff. And that's all good, but really the recovery for me today is in my day-to-day living. We talk about the 12 steps and there's the sharing of the message, but really there's the practicing these principles in all our affairs. And for me, that's where the rubber meets the road. My inner, she's sensitive and she don't like it if I, if I'm not, I have to actually do the work. I have to live the work, right? And for me, that means, and that means I requires a maintenance program. So I have to keep going to meetings. I go to a lot of meetings. I have a meeting I do every morning at 7 a.m. It's how I start my day. That meeting sometimes lasts 2 hours. It's fine. I have, but that's on Zoom. It's easy. I get up at 6:45 and I'm in the meeting by 7. And at 8 it stops and then it goes on to a part two, which is why. But I'm self-employed, so I have that luxury today of that time, and I enjoy it. It's a literature meeting, so we get to read about I it's also that's that our daily meditation book. We actually do the daily meditation, the reading from the Big Red Book, and then something that's hopefully helpful out of the Loving Parent Guidebook. I call it Kamikaze Recovery. Because every day it's something a little different. And you just never know what you're going to get, whether it's about service work or about traditions, or it's, we're talking about incest, we're talking about, you never know. You're talking about abandonment, and the next day you're talking about joy and learning to play. So every day it's something a little different, but it reminds me, because I need to be re I know that I need to be reminded because I have the great forgetter. I mean, it would be I'd like to be able to go, oh no, I'm fine, I'm good, Nothing to see here. Who wants to step up and talk about being abused and neglected as a child? What the? Really? Come on now. Like, nobody wants to do this. But here's the thing, if people didn't do it before I got here, like, I wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? So the thing is, the thing about the 12 step and sharing the message is, if this stuff w works for you and it helps you, then you got to keep it going because we're all we got. And you know what? We are all we need. It's fine because we can help each other. That Love and Parent Guidebook is written by us. It's written by adult children for adult children. And that's why it's a language that we can understand. And nobody understands us better than we do. And so if if this stuff works for you and it helps you, it's important that we remember where we came from and we spread the message. And with everything that's going on in the world right now, I can't think of anything more important than helping adult children heal from having been traumatized as children. And I'm here to tell you, we do heal. All right? We heal, we get better, we have lives, we're productive, and we can help other people because man, I there's a lot more of us than we even have a clue of. I'm afraid that that's just facts. And the more I read about shit that's going on, the more I realize, wow. It wasn't my, I was gaslight lit into believing that that was all normal, and so people out there doing it and living that way, they're all gaslit into believing that it's normal. And the thing is what I've learned is, it's not normal. I mean, maybe it's normal because everybody's doing it, but it's not good for us. Like, there's so much more that we human beings, we are so much more than we appear to be. Like, we are so much, there's so much more to us, and learning to duck and hide and ditch and dive and then living that way for so long, it wasn't pleasant. When I was before I got into recovery and I started working on a program and being rigorously honest, and because the original 12 steps, they're important, okay? Because we got to get right with ourselves, we got to get right with the way we're living. And then this whole how's my time? Am I are you trying to text me? Okay, I don't know how long ago that was.
20 left.
Okay, thank you. Those original steps, I needed them to get out of the hole I was in, but then I needed something else. I needed more than that. It wasn't enough. I always say, if you had a great childhood, and you're gonna meet people who did, they're out there. They're hard to find, but they did. There are people out there that had great childhoods. They were raised with love and compassion, and they were raised to be good people. And then they got older and they started drinking and they couldn't stop. They got the gene. The gene was in them and they became alcoholic and they couldn't stop drinking. And they went to AA and they did the steps and they had a miraculous spiritual awakening. And good for them, they became the person they were before they started drinking. All right. Well, my problem was I started drinking when I was 10. Okay. So, first thing I drank was gin, and I got good and drunk, and I thought, "Woo, that's medicine," And so, what was I going to do? I reverted to being a 10-year-old. So, what does a 10-year-old know about life? I got no life skills. I go back to, my relationship with my grandmother. Well, that ended when I was 5. Well, you don't have the same kind of relationships with people as you grow older, right? The 10-year-old doesn't have the same relationship that the 5-year-old had. The 15-year-old doesn't have the same relationship that the 5-year-old or the 10-year-old had. You grow up. Relationships change. You grow into relationships. Well, I didn't have those relationships. That was something I discovered was missing in my life. I didn't know how to have close, intimate relationships that didn't turn sexual. Because then that's easy. These are, that's why is the secret of my codependent relationships, right? You have sex. Oh, we're intimate. We know each other. No, you don't. Relationships take time. It takes time to get to know somebody and to trust them and to learn them. And I realize, and you can't do that until you know yourself. So taking the time out of life to learn to have a relationship with myself has been so amazing. I mean, I'm still like I've been doing it a long time, but I still feel like I've just barely scratched the surface of what that is. I'm really, I thought I was gonna come here and I was gonna fix my codependent issues because it was my picker. My picker was broken. I just was picking broken people. I was picking people who were just like me. I was picking people who were just like my family. I was picking, and then I didn't even realize like what I would do is I would, as soon as I would be all like, I'd have my shit together, I'd be doing life, and then as soon as I met somebody I liked more than me, I'd jump out of my life and into theirs. And now I don't have a life again, and I don't know who I am, and I'm lost and confused. And so I don't know. And I thought that I was just gonna like fix my picker and so I could get a better relationship. And now the best relationship I have is the relationship with me. And I'm still just getting to know her. And I like her. And that's amazing. I mean, I could tell you I've had eating disorders, addiction, you name it. I could be addicted to it, from food to sex to booze, whatever. It was like playing whack-a-mole. I don't want to play whack-a-mole with that. I wanna love myself, and in a way that's, and also, and then, there was last year, we started getting into the Tony A, who is the founder of ACA, did a talk in 1991. I actually ran it through AI, so it was easier to listen to, and his steps, he has a set of steps, and it's all about getting in touch with your higher power and your inner self. And we call it the journey to self-love. And I realized I didn't have a relationship with a higher power or my inner, my higher selves, because I didn't trust them, And so learning to realizing that that relationship was based on, my own inner self, right? Learning to trust that part of me has been a whole journey on its own. Also, also there's somatic stuff. Like, so I've had arthritis is a big part of my story because, I used to like be all crunched up and, trying to hide. I've had six spine surgeries, both knees replaced, both thumb joints. Yeah, it's been a physical recovery, along with an emotional recovery and a spiritual recovery, and also energy. I didn't know we were supposed to feel energy moving in our body. Like, I didn't know that I was supposed to like feel stuff going on in my gut. There's all this information out there that's helpful. Like, even there's a nerve, I can't think of the name of it right now, that runs through our body, and that like it can get clenched up and just stay that way. So you're constantly in that fight, flight, or flee state of being. And there are somatic healings that you can do that can help relieve that so that you can free up that energy so it can move through your body. Because we're not just flesh and bones, we're not like rocks. We're energy. There's energy running through our bodies, I didn't know that because when I was little I was probably treated like a rock when I think about it. It's terrible, but here's the thing. I can laugh about it today, and I'm not saying this is going to happen tomorrow, but eventually you may be able to laugh about it too. And I had some terrible shit happen, and you don't have to like. I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to talk about the abuse because it doesn't matter. This is the whole point today. It doesn't matter what happened to me. It doesn't matter what what they did, and I can even at a point where I can forgive them because I don't want to carry that shit anymore. I don't want to carry it. I could say that's it's energy that drains me. And I say like In Al-Anon, they go right to the forgiveness point. We want to talk about it first. You're not going to just get a free pass. We want to talk about it. We want to figure out what went wrong, and we need to own that shit, and then I'll forgive you. Although I don't suggest anybody tries to do it with the people who, get a fellow traveler to talk about this stuff or a good therapist. I always say the person my mother was when I buried her, was not the same woman who treated me terribly when I was little. She had changed, and she would have never gotten it. I could have never had these conversations with her. She just would have, it just wouldn't have, it wouldn't have worked. I needed to have these conversations with me, a therapist, fellow travelers, other people who understood, but I could never have had these conversations with my mother. So just it just saying. And with some people it could even be dangerous, and the last thing you want to do is put yourself in more danger. The whole point is learning to love yourself, love ourselves, and have compassion for ourselves and keep ourselves safe. Safety inside our bodies, it's important. But yeah, I mean, I can laugh about it now. I can laugh about but I'm a survivor. I survived. And here we are. I must be getting close on time now. How am I doing, Terry?
10 minutes.
I still got 10 minutes. Wow. anyway, what can I say in 10 minutes? If there was anything, I think if I could tell the person I was when I first got here anything, it would be, I know this is weird and hard, but keep going. Actually, there's a section in the Loving Parent Guidebook called Doubts and Misgivings. I think it's Appendix A. I would read her Appendix A, because it really goes over all of the things that might, be like, oh, this is weird, and but I would tell her, I mean, I just learned so much about myself. A funny thing that I learned about myself was I wanted a reward. I wanted a tangible reward. I wanted the cake, the candy. Give me some. And I realized, what? That was my addictions rearing their ugly head, because what I realized in that was the reward was the relationship. The relationship I have with my inner parts, my energy, the universe, the relationship I can have now with my dogs who are walking around, because they're like, "Mommy, it's late. Why are you still up?" I know it's 11:20 here in Rhode Island, just so you know, and it's way past my bedtime. And my dog is like, "What are you doing up here talking like it's 3 o'clock?" Early in the morning. Anyway, the relationship I can have with them, the relationship I have a relationship with my ex who I share a house with, and my brother, who was one of the people who, like, I would have told you was treated me the worst when I was little, lives in my house. He has an apartment that he rents, and I love having him here. I love that he has his own apartment that he goes to. Don't get me wrong. We're friends now. Like, I didn't know him when I was little. We had a kind of a funny amends. He had said something. He likes to clean. He's one of those people. I'm like, it can stay there. Where it sits is it can sit there. I don't care. It's fine. And he said something to me about it one day, and I said, "Well, I wasn't raised like you." I said, "I was raised by you." And he goes, "Oh, sorry." And I just said to him, "You know what? It's okay. Last I checked, you weren't my father, and it wasn't your job to raise me." And that's a fact. He wasn't my father, and it wasn't his job to raise me. And he wasn't happy about the position he was put in either. And today we don't really talk about it, because he's not in recovery, and it's not something he needs to do. But we're good with where we are today. Today, he treats me with dignity and respect, and I treat him with dignity and respect. and we love each other. And that, talk about a gift of recovery. I mean, they just, the gifts go on and on. So I would tell myself when I first got here, do the work, wax on, wax off. I know it all seems weird, but just do the work and keep doing it. And I always love, there's sometimes it happens in meetings or when you're talking to a fellow traveler and you see that thing will come over them. And all of a sudden they'll have that whoosh of they felt something move inside of them. And that spark of awakening has happened, and you know it, you feel it, and you see it in their eyes. And it's just like, that's it. Keep coming and keep doing the work. And eventually you'll feel that thing move inside of you and you'll be like, oh, this is real. And you keep doing the work and you keep coming. And it does get better and it gets easier. And eventually, you can even laugh about some of the crap you went through. I think I'm good now, Terry. I got nothing else to say.